Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Siddharth Ambedkar. He's a Kashmiri Indian American that has lived through some very significant times in Kashmir. You may know that there is a tremendous controversy right now about the Indian government's what is called the abrogation of Article 370. To most Americans, this is a challenge to resonate, but we're hoping to get more of an explanation today here on Common Threads. A bit about our guest, Siddharth Ambedkar, was born in Baramulla, a town of Kashmir that is about 30 miles from the border with Pakistan. His early education was at St. Mary's Convent and St. Joseph's School. These were run by the Catholic priests from Britain, Italy, Poland, and Ireland. He earned his Bachelor of Engineering degree in Kashmir in the 80s, and then a Master of Engineering and a Master of Business at George Washington University. His parents, both teachers, taught in Kashmir until 1990 when they had to leave because of religiously driven violence and militancy. He currently works for a major defense contractor in the Washington, D.C. area and is an advocate for the Kashmiri cause. So we welcome once again to Common Threads, Siddharth Ambedkar.
Siddharth, yes, Fred,
hello.
I'm back.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, Siddharth, last week you gave what I believe to be perhaps the most thorough history of Kashmir that one could possibly give in a very short amount of time. I know that.
Yes. The challenge has been to make it concise and at least be fair and balanced, as they say, and truthful.
Exactly.
And that's what I have tried.
Yes. We ended last week with you talking about the abrogation of Article 370. So I'd like you to pick up with that. What is the article and why was it included to begin with?
I'll try to do my best, and other people may have different interpretations, and they're welcome to that. But essentially, the problem or the challenge for the government of India in 1947 or after the partition was how to make sure that all people in India would be kind of in a cohesive, in a pluralistic society, and that their regional aspirations were safeguarded, but at the same time, centralizing effect that takes place in most modern states also ensures the integrity, territorial integrity of India. So in 1947, there was a very popular person in Kashmir. He was only popular in Kashmir. He was not popular in Jammu or in Ladakh, who were Ladakhis. And Jammu was Dogra Hindus. He was not quite popular with them, but he was very popular with the Kashmiri Muslims, and he ruled in a way out of Kashmir, out of Srinagar. His name was Sheikh Muhammad Abdullah. He was a college teacher. He was an MSc from Aligarh Muslim University, and he was very good friends with Nehru, and as I said previously, when Nehru was dilly-dallying whether he should accept the accession of the Maharaja to India or whether Indian troops should be flown into Kashmir to safeguard Indian interests or to safeguard the nuns in Baramulla or to safeguard the local population who, although they were Muslims, they were being killed and butchered by their own Muslim who were supposedly their agents of deliverance, if one may call it. And within a week, when the local Muslims saw what was happening at the hands of their Muslim brothers from Pathans and Afridis from northwest areas of Kashmir, they basically said, this is no Islam. We do not want to live in this kind of a situation. So anyway, Sheikh Abdullah, seeing the writing, he acceded to India. And Nehru, to make him kind of, in a way, I can say this was a sop to him, said, okay, we will give you extra extra freedoms or extra will make you more of a special status for you, for your people, so that you will have extra rights within the Constitution of India. And he said, sure, why not? And that is how Article 370 came into being. And it was not part of the Indian main body of the Constitution. It's an Appendix 21. It is a temporary provision. It was labeled as a temporary provision when it was introduced and passed in the Parliament of India in, I believe, 1949. So the accession that happened in 1947 is a separate issue. It has nothing to do with Article 370. India was still forming its constitution, and this article came much later than 1947. So if people say that 1947, the accession to India, was conditional on Article 370, they better read their history carefully. That is not so. Article 370 came in 1949. And it is interesting to note that the framer of the Indian Constitution, his name was Mr. Ambedkar, he refused point blank to insert this article in the appendix. And he said, you are doing a disservice to India by producing or by creating special rights for people unnecessarily, and there's no need to have this article as a special privilege for certain people, especially because the article, it had some very, very bad law. It was not good governance. It did not allow women full rights. It prohibited all rule of law of the Indian Parliament to apply on India, on in Kashmir. It prevented certain privileges that all people are born equal. And it said, no, if you're a Kashmiri, you're more, if you're a Kashmiri Muslim primarily, you're more special than the rest of the Indians. It did not allow any Indian from the rest of India to settle permanently in Kashmir. They could not buy land there, even though they had the money, or it would have been a fair trade between two willing parties. No, you cannot. And if you're a lady, or if you're a young girl, and you marry anyone outside the state of Jammu and Kashmir, you lose your rights to any inherited property. However, if you are a resident of Pakistan and you come into Kashmir, you gain property rights there. So this was a very strange, very, very odd law. And embedded in it, there was another very, I think, a sting in the tail, as they say over here. There was another article called Article 35A, and that basically gave the state government of Jammu and Kashmir, the right to determine who is a permanent resident of Kashmir. It's like saying that the state of Virginia can decide who is a U.S. citizen, which runs counter to all. It's a federal issue. Citizenship is a federal issue, but if a state in Virginia can decide that these guys are citizens of America, that is very odd. However, Mr. Nehru, to in a way placate Sheikh Mohammed Abdullah, agreed to have this put inserted in the article, and the framer of the Constitution basically did not appear during the voting for when this thing was ratified. But Nehru, being Nehru, nobody or very few people had the backbone to stand up to him. He got the article in the Constitution, and it stayed there, even though it was labeled as a temporary and transient provision of the Indian Constitution. Coming back fast forward, a lot of people, a lot of politicians saw that this was not the right thing, and they were kind of did not have the guts to bell the cat, as they say, and say, well, how long is temporary temporary? Is it 1 year? Is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? And most people, if you ask them what is temporary, they'll say, okay, after 5-10 years, there's a sunset clause to any law unless it is renewed. And this kept on going for 70 years until recently, when the BJP government, people do associate them with the Hindu right wing or Hindu nationalist, which I think is wrong. They are more concerned about the integrity of India, the territorial integrity of India. And one of their earlier leaders or forefathers, if it can be called, was name called Mr. Mukherjee, Shama Prasad Mukherjee. He was a virulent critic of Nehru and Nehru's Kashmir policies, or Nehru's kind of a very naive policies of how people, or how a state is to be run. And in 1953, or sometime around that time, he decided that he would travel to Kashmir and basically protest against Article 370. And he was not allowed because he was a citizen of India, but he could not travel to Kashmir because Sheikh Abdullah did not let him come in. He did forcibly go into Kashmir, and there he was put in prison, and he died there, and it caused huge shockwaves all throughout India. And how can an Indian citizen be treated that way? Anyway, the BJP in those days made it their platform that if they ever came to power, they would look at this thing carefully and that they would abrogate it. So the BJP is in power now. They are in power. This is the second term. They have won convincingly, and true to their agenda, they passed it through both houses of the parliament. In the upper house, they did not have a majority, but some of the other parties agreed that this was the right thing to do. And then it passed through the lower house by two-thirds of a majority, and it has been abrogated. Interestingly, it has not been nullified, as most people say. Part 1 of the Article 370 says that Kashmir is an integral part of India, and they have retained Article 1 of 370. And the rest of the statutes, which gave the Kashmiri politicians special dispensation to have no, for example, the controller and auditor general of India cannot look into your funds. All the funds that are coming in from India, there's no track of them. He can't ask for an accounting of them. They all have gone now. Unfortunately, what it did, Article 370, it created a cleavage between politically astute or politically privileged people, politicians of Kashmir and the rest of India. It prevented the free flow of ideas because the Kashmiri Muslims, the Mahbuba Muftis and the Sheikh Abdullahs and the Farooq Abdullahs, and many of them thought they had privilege and they could do whatever they wanted because they were shielded from the laws of the Indian Constitution. Parliament's writ did not run in Kashmir. So they abused this, in my opinion. And rather than letting the monies go down to the lower peasants, the poor people, they held it in their own families. And this caused, and electoral malpractices, it caused a lot of tension. Now that it has been revoked, 10 years ago, if people protested against the Indian army or the Indian police that is trying to bring some normalcy to Kashmir, there would have been 5,000 people out shouting and throwing stones and throwing Molotov cocktails at the CRPF, which is the local police, and people would have been killed. Many would have been killed. Unfortunately, none such violence has happened. There have been restrictions. Some people have been detained, maybe in the thousands or so. But these are the guys who had no fear of the law or the police, and they would create huge law and order situations just because they knew nobody could touch them. And that is what happened in the last 3 months now. I do say that the restrictions, hopefully they are removed right away. The internet has been stopped, and this has become kind of a huge human rights crisis. But there's a reason why the internet has been stopped or has been curtailed. It's because paid protesters who are kind of accumulated because of WhatsApp, and they show up as 10,000 on the street and start throwing stones at the security forces. And it is to prevent further loss of life or any loss of life. Any person who is hurt or killed or injured, it should not happen, be it a Kashmiri Sikh, be it a Kashmiri Muslim, be it a Kashmiri pundit. Anyway, there are no Kashmiri pundits, or very few left in there. Most of them, 400,000, left the valley. But to retain public order, to retain law and order, there has been a strong security clamp in most of Kashmir Valley only. Jammu has no problem. Ladakh districts have no problem. They are celebrating that now they can get a better deal with the federal government in India. It is a very small, restrictive issue only in Kashmir Valley. And people who have been hurt, I feel for them. There is restrictions, but they hopefully and quickly will be removed so that we will come out into a peaceful and plural part of Kashmir, which is part of India. And if people complain that it is a restriction on them, yes, I can understand you can't order your ice cream on the, you can't get pizza or you can't go to fill in a form. Yes, the restrictions are there, but they are for a reason to prevent public disorder and mayhem, which used to happen 6 months ago or a year ago, because privilege and power went together and you could do anything, and the state forces really were held back and they could not bring you to book. Now, with the new Home Minister, things have changed. Hopefully, it will ease out and everyone's life will be preserved. And that is what we would like to happen in Kashmir and India. And then those people, this is one thing that I feel, those people who publicly have boasted about killing Kashmiri pundits publicly on TV and on tape, and they say, I murdered 20, I murdered 35, I've lost count, and they became politicians. They should be brought to justice. Justice should be delivered to them. So at least the fear of law and order and equality before all stays in Kashmir.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Siddharth Ambedkar, and we are talking about the crisis in Kashmir. So one thing that people need to know, and I think we touched on it last week, but people who were Indian citizens became refugees in their own country. Talk about what many refer to as the ethnic cleansing of the Kashmiri pundits that took place in the 90s.
Well, that's a very sorry development that did happen in 1989-1990. And violence was targeted at them, and they were specifically, or they were like, you have 50 or 60 or 70 people in a mob suddenly show up on your house and tell you, you better leave, or we will do this, or we will do that. And to set the example, let's say people of the minority community in Kashmir, which is the Hindus, they're hardly 3% of them, or they hardly used to be 3% in the Kashmir Valley. Their prominent leaders were shot in broad daylight, and the corpses are lying on the street, and no one dares to catch the killers who just waved their Kalashnikovs guns, who had come in from, they had been supported by Pakistan and Pakistan's ISI, because they wanted to create instability in Kashmir and bleed India by a thousand cuts, as they say. And the minority community, which is basically Kashmiri Hindus, were terrorized. They were terrorized, and the local state government basically abdicated their responsibility. They did nothing. They just watched and watched and watched as the situation snowballed. And every day, every week, there were reports of arson. There were reports of killings of Kashmiri pundits. There were reports of murder, of rape of women. And the local politician, who were Muslims, who was the home minister, was a Muslim gentleman of India, Mufti Saeed, he did nothing. And the federal government in Delhi was basically in paralysis. They had no idea what to do or how to go about it. And basically, it's difficult to say, but India was brought to its knee in those days when the terrorism sponsored by Pakistan and aided and abetted by Pakistan, they used the local Kashmiri Muslims to create trouble, because their thinking was that they will take up Kashmir, and Kashmir would finally become part of Pakistan as an unfinished business of partition, and also as payback for the Bangladesh War of 1971, where half of Pakistan left and became a separate country. And what happened in those four or five weeks or months was horrible. A lot of people were killed. The security forces came in, and they also started trying to control the situation. And some of them lost their heads also, and they acted brutally. So if it became a war situation, in a war situation, no niceties are observed most of the time. So the Kashmiri Pandits, they had to leave within a period of 2 to 3 weeks. The whole valley was emptied of them, and they left with nothing on their backs. My parents, our marriage was supposed to happen in 1989 in October, November, December in Srinagar, and they had prepared everything, even though the situation was tense, and my wife was supposed to fly into Kashmir, to Srinagar. We could not hold it because the marriage had to be postponed because the people were pelting stones on temples and they were pulling down common, if you had put up your tent, and they would come in and throw mud on the tent to disturb the practice. So our marriage was not held. We could not hold our marriage in Srinagar, even though my grandfather had prepared it for 5 months. He had gone to the local baker, had to bake a cake or whatever they call it, the special types of clay cakes, and they had decorated the place, and the invitation cards had been sent, and the butcher had been talked to bring in 50 goat or sheep or whatever, but nothing could be done, and we had to flee. My parents had to flee in a truck overnight with many elderly, disabled people, and they basically spent their lives in refugee camps in Jammu, in Mithi, in Nagrota, in Mishriwala, in Puthu, in all those. Nothing. The state government had no idea how to deal with them, how to help the poor, or how to help the displaced refugees. And horrible for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. It was a horrible existence for my parents and for many, many others. Thousands died. Thousands were bitten by these scorpions and snakes because they're out in the fields. They're out under a torn canvas tent. And the biggest pity was these people, the Kashmiri, the guy, Hindus who were from the small towns of Kashmir, they had no language skills. They had no education. They were basically peasants. They were tillers of the ground. And they are in not a very hot climate. And here they come out to Jammu, and they're living out on barren rocks, and nobody raises any question. They were not helped. So they had a horrible, miserable experience. And many died. And all they wanted to do is be part of Hindu India or be part of plural India. And because they were Hindus, they were thrown out of Kashmir Valley, which was taken over by the jihadis and the Wahhabis.
So let me ask you this, Siddharth. Do you see this, the situation today, is there a clear demarcation that this is a Hindu versus Muslim issue? Or not?
I think there are two clear clefts in it, or I would say two layers of it. The problem in Kashmir, I would say, is fundamentally Islamic terrorism. I cannot not say that. It is driven by a theological idea that Kashmir belongs to the Kashmiri Muslims, and then it is and that nobody else should have any right to live in Kashmir Valley if he's not a Islamic person. There also is another layer of Kashmiri Muslims themselves who are tired of this, and they want to be a part of progressive India. I hope they will rise up and they will express their opinions, because they themselves have suffered at the hands of the militants. They have been killed. Their leaders have been killed by the Muslim militants, who tell them that you are being too soft, or you're being too plural, or you're being too out of the real message of Islam. However, 95% of the problem, in my view, is due to Islamic terrorism, which is spreading across the world and has happened in Kashmir. But now, hopefully, that dynamics will change and that a common person, be it a Hindu, a Christian, a Muslim, a Sikh in Kashmir, can at least live freely, can live with a sense of dignity and a sense of security. And that will come about once this 370 is fully implemented, removal of it, so its abrogation, which has started since October 31st of 2019. I see some signs of peace. I see some signs for hope, but this removal is only an intent of the government of India. It has to be implemented thoroughly, fairly, and judiciously, and not antagonize more people, because the Kashmiri Muslims, many of them have suffered horribly. They don't deserve that. They are good people. All people are good people. Everyone's life is important. Everyone's life is valued. No one should be forced to go through what has happened in Kashmir over the last 30 years, unfortunately. And religious fundamentalism is the problem, and that should not happen.
We just have a minute left, and I mentioned last week and today about your father's book, Days of Destiny, a Memoir. How can people get a hold of this book?
The book is available on a website, and if they can email me, I'm glad to send it to them.
And if people go to our website, www.interfaithdialogueassociation.org, you can pick up our email address, and we'll be more than happy to connect you with Siddharth. You've been listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. Siddharth Ambedkar was our guest today. Please join us again next week here on WGVU.